Vamos a empezar esa tercera sesión del diálogo global sobre agricultura familiar, que es una sesión sobre las perspectivas regionales de la agricultura familiar. Esa sesión, este panel, va a ser dividido en dos sesiones. La primera sesión será sobre Latinoamérica y el Caribe, Norte de África, el Oriente Medio. Y la segunda sesión sobre Asia del Pacífico, Europa, Asia Central y América del Norte. Solo muy alegres y satisfechos de que el director general participe en esta sesión. Le voy a explicar en un minuto la dinámica de nuestra labor hoy. El profesor Sergio Schneider, de la Universidad Federal de Rio Grande del Sur de Brasil, hará una primera intervención ilustrando en términos generales los 6 papers académicos que han sido preparados por nuestros autores que ahora voy a comentar. Luego después, los profesores tomarán la palabra para explicar mejor su propio contexto regional. El profesor Ray Bush, School of Politics and International Studies, University of Leeds, England. Professor Sam Moyo, Executive Director of the African Institute for Agrarian Studies. And then again, Professor Sergio Schneider. After the presentation of the authors, we will give the floor to the Special Ambassadors of the International Family Farming, Ms. Mina Cunningham, Ms. Mohamed Ouloulzalek, Mr. Ibrahima Koulibaly, and then we're going to give the floor to His Excellency Amadou Alouri Diallo, Minister, Niger, Haute Commissaire for the 3N Initiative, and Minister Carlos Casamichela, Minister of Agriculture, Livestock and Fishery of the Republic of Argentina. Please, Professor Sergio Schneider, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to thanks for the opportunity to participate in this global dialogue. Mr. General Director, Professor Graziano da Silva, my dear fellow and professor from Brazil, also colleagues, my colleagues that helped to prepare these studies, Ray Bush, Sam Moyo, Professor Yandao, Professor Yejing Zong, and also John Eichert from the United States. So thank you very much. So I would like to summarize these main topics that we developed on our studies. So please, the summary of my presentation is try to present very, very quickly idea of the world of families, farms, and second, the contribution of the family farms. Third, the hidden features and advantages of family farms, the main constraints, and how to support and foster family farming around the world. Next one, please. So a world of family small farms. At least 3 points are important. What we already know about family farming in the world. 3 main points here. The recently, FAO published a new discussion paper, and it finally we have a number that in the world there are around 500 million units of family farms from a total of units of 570 million farms. Family farms contribute importantly with food production, and 13% of these family farms are in low-income countries, 36% in lower middle-income countries, and 71% of family farms have less than 1 hectare. I will show some figures follow. Family farms are highly diversified around the world. They are diversified by access to land, by farming and production system, and also they are diversified by income and economic position, especially those that are more poor. And third general feature of family farm, and what we already know in the world, that statistic and information available at the moment about family farms is still misunderstood what's really going on about family farms. So that is a point to go deeper in further studies. So here some figures from this recent studies of family farms. You can see in green, in black actually, 47% of the share of farms are in upper middle income countries, and 36% in lower middle income countries. So family farm is still in the developing world nowadays. So next, please. The share of farms by land size. Most of family farms are very, very small scale farms. So 72% of family farms around the world have still 1 hectare or less than 1 hectare of land. And if we add the other 12% that have still 2 hectares, we have 84% of family farms in the world that has less than two hectares. Next, please. Most of them small farmers or family farms are located in the third world or in the developing countries. So you can see here in this figure that we have a high share of agriculture holdings, so less than 2 hectares, 84%, and a very small group of farms that with more than 200 or 1,000 hectares. So just the next one, please. Just as a very quick remark on conceptual discussions. When we are talking about family farms, we don't have to start again the knowledge that is available. Family farms has to do with peasantry and small-scale farming. And when we are talking about peasantry, at least three elements are very, very important, are key issues to define these farm units. The family and the land, it comprises family and the land, a kind of culture, values, and their tradition, and of course, the rural communities. There is no peasantry, there is no family farms without these three elements. Next one, please. But of course, when we look at family farming, there is an evolution. Family farming means to include peasantry and small-scale farms, and family farming comprise the relation with these small-scale farms, with society, with the markets, and with food production. And what are the main functions of these family farms? In terms of food production, small farms contribute for local supply markets, but also national and global food chains. It's not true that family farms just are linked to local production. They also contribute to the food production in the national and the global scale. So by this way, family farms have a very important role for economic development. So family farming also has to do with markets, and this market issues is sometimes a key feature of family farms. Because of employment, family farms are very important in terms of the employment, locally and nationally especially, and also for income generation. Family farms give a strong contribution for income generation, and as it was also said before, in the panel before, to rural development. But also, family farmers give a strong contribution for the society as a whole, especially by the access of land. This is a main asset for family farms, but it's not just related to land. It's also related to local resources, especially water, seeds, and other biodiversity. And for this reason, family farms provide an important contribution for environmental resilience. So these three features, food production, relation to society, and relation to the markets, are key points to understand the place and the function of family farms in the national and international scenario nowadays. So next, please. So here we have the definition of family farming that FAO is working is strongly comes out a definition from the International Steering Committee for the International Year of Family Farming. I believe that is a very good definition that we can use, because in this definition, family farming includes agriculture activities and other. It means organization of agriculture, forestry, fishery, pastoral and aquaculture production, which is managed and operated by a family and predominantly relied on family labor. This is very important, the issue of family labor, including both women and men. The family and the farm are linked, co-evolute, and combine economic, environmental, social, and cultural functions. Next, please. So I just want to show you this beautiful figure that my colleague, Professor Van der Ploeg, developed. Family farm contribute with 10 main characteristics. This is in the papers. These features are involved in the three points that I highlighted just recently. Next, please. What are the main contributions of family farming in terms what we found around these five regions in the world? I could summarize the main contribution in five points. First, and obviously, food security and production. Family farm is very important to supply food locally, regionally, and globally. And family farm is very important for production. For some countries, there is no way for national strategy of development without taking account family farming. But secondly, family farming is also fundamental to overcome rural poverty. If we look at the recent studies, the recent reports that comes out from different international organizations like IFAD, FAO, and UNPD, we can look a kind of common sense that family farm is a solution of the problem of rural poverty. It's not the problem, it's part of the solution, as it was said in the first section by Professor and Director General Graziano da Silva. But family farming is also important for demographic dynamics. The world is living a demographic transition, people getting more elder, and family farm is in a lot of countries. Family farm is still a key reservoir of people in the rural areas. So we cannot think on demographic dynamics without thinking on the key strategic role of the family farms. But four. Family farming is also very important for livelihood resilience, and because of the context of climate change. We cannot think to look way out of the international problem with climate change without to foster and to support the family's livelihood. This is especially true in areas where family farms are more weak. And also rural development. As was said, rural development is a key issue for family farms. Next, please. So I will finish. There are also hidden features for the family farms. Next. Cultural and symbolic dimensions. Gender, generation, young people, and access to knowledge and traditions are very important, because with these features we can think that on the art of farming and rural space with people. Some perspective think that there is possible a rural without people. Family farms will exactly provide people and social life to the rural areas. Next, please. To better understand family farms, there are a lot of challenges. Family farm is not about size, just about size. It's about family and is about work. Family farming is not against technology and markets. Family farming there is a lot of theoretical and political misunderstanding on this role. The risk of climate change and the erosion of conditions to work is also a risk and should be better understood for family farm. And also the squeeze of the global food change with prices and technology squeeze is important, as well as land grabbing and strong pressure on land, and also the state and the policies that should be play an important role. And to there are some next one, please. There are some features from the different regions. I would skip this and go to how to support and foster family farm. Next, please. We can in the papers that we prepare, we can indicate some guidelines or enablers, especially on three points. First, policies and public support must be better understand the diversity of family farm and deal with it locally, regionally, and globally. It was also said there is no one, just one solution for all family farms in the world. It should be used as a guideline to deal with family farming. Second, innovation and technology produce. The point is how we can produce more with less, how to use the land in a better way in terms to make a sustainable intensification and aggregate more value to not lose too much resources that are very important in rural areas. And third guideline is poverty and family farms. Poverty and family farms, it's important to understand that we should overcome with structural vulnerabilities. Poverty is not just from the farm gate inside, it also relates to the local and the regional economy. So what policies can we suggest? Next one, please. What policy can we suggest or in our papers comes out are outcomes for our discussion? First, markets. There is no... We have not to think that markets are strange or family farms do not have to integrate in markets. But it's not every time, it's not every kind of markets. And farmers have to go to the market, but not too much, neither too less. So a balance in between an autonomy and a relation with these markets is very important. Second, policies should strengthen social capital and cooperation. Last year was the international year of the cooperativism, and this is still very important to reduce transaction costs that are very important for family farming. And third, policies should support gender and generation, especially to think farmers for the future. We need the young people. We need highlight the role of the women in terms of farms. So this means that family farming is not about just farming, it's also about family. And family means here the women, the youngers, and the whole people of the family. And finally, family farm have to be connected to the national and the global rural development strategy. There is no future for family farming without a rural development strategy. So we should think how put in family farming in this more general perspectives. So I thank you very much. Gracias por su atención.
Thank you very much, Professor Sergio Schneider, for having drawn a broad picture of family farming across the world. We now go to more focusing regional perspectives. And I will give the floor to Professor Raybash. We will have 5 minutes, please, Professor Raybash, on family farming in North Africa and Near East. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and good morning. I hope people will have an opportunity to read the longer paper. I am going to talk for 5 minutes. The paper is 15,000 words, so I think you may have some patience or offer some conduct. some concern about how I can summarise this. Now, there are some important characteristics and also some words of caution when dealing with the Near East and North Africa. I mean, the first is that small family farmers in the region constitute something like 3% of the 500 million that Sergio just referred to. There's considerable levels of fragmentation, of marginalisation, particularly of women, female-headed households, and difficulties of socially reproducing household units under immense conditions of stress. 85% of all holdings are less than 5 hectares. 50% are just 1 hectare, but 6% of holdings are in the areas 10 to 50 hectares, and they account for something like 40% of the total holding area. So immediately you can see that this is a region of considerable inequalities in the levels of land holdings. There's also, I think, a concern that we need to have in relation to data. Data in this region is problematic and not always the most easy to deal with, and the basis upon which it's constructed is not entirely straightforward. And like other regions, this region is not unique in the immense contradiction that on the one hand we have high levels of rural malnutrition running alongside high levels of obesity. There are three main challenges to family farmers in the region: war, economic reform, and climate change. This is a region of the greatest number of international wars since World War II of any other region. Does this specify it as a unique region compared to others? War, as you know, undermines the self-sustaining family farm. It destroys lives. It undermines infrastructure. It displaces women and children. In the occupied Palestinian territories, for example, it's unlikely that any of the 10,000 family farms has not been touched or impacted by the illegal occupation and the recent levels of intervention. This is also now a time to reflect on economic reform. Economic reform has been with us long enough for us now to look back and say, well, is there something about it that we can now see whether it has been successful or not, and in what kinds of conditions? 35 years of marginalisation of particularly smallholders, of increases in input prices, the promotion of cash crops for export rather than investment in staples for local food consumption. And finally, the third challenge is, of course, climate change. This is a region that is stuck in a matrix of oil, fuel, water, agriculture, which has accelerated new drilling and capital intensification of agriculture. And yet it's in a region also where more than 50% of the arable land in 11 countries is rain-fed. Rain-fed in a context where the projection for rainfall reduction by 2050 is a fall of a further 10%. So we can see an ecological, environmental, climate change challenge. Now, what are the enabling environments in those contexts of war, economic reform, and climate change? The FAO regional dialogue is absolutely clear on this. It's to integrate and support family farmers, boost investment and financing, increase the share of value added that accrues to farmers, improve access to land, and support women and youth. But how can that list be delivered? It is unlikely that anybody in this theatre would object to any of those conditions, and yet the deliverability of them is our biggest challenge, not necessarily only our diagnosis of what the problematic is. This is a list of reforms in a context of extreme violence, of economic liberalisation and climate crisis. How can we integrate family farming into development without the dominance of the market and the economic interests that are associated with that? How can we encourage rural development that is not structured around big project development, that is capital intensive in labour surplus economies? There is growth in the region, but it is without work. How can we fashion economic reforms and policy agendas that are more labour intensive and that also sustain levels of improved and increased productivity. So the research agenda then, it seems to me, is first of all a research agenda. There is still much, and as an academic, of course, I'm forgiven for saying there's still much that we need to learn. Mm-hmm. There's a research agenda to employ academics in the future, mm-hmm. but there is certainly a need to explore and understand the complexity of family farming. Family farming as a concept is absolutely important, and the definition is crucial. However, don't allow the definition to flatten complexity. The research and policy intervention has to be dynamic, it has to be differentiated, and as colleagues spoke this morning from the platform, it has to be an agenda that, first of all, listens to farmers, let farmers initiate and also control and coordinate their own extension. It's also necessary to explore the precarious lives of labourers and near landless who work in food processing, for example, and commercialisation of agriculture. And it's also a reminder for us to just reflect on one thing. In a context of deregulation and persistent economic reform, there is a clash between economic reform and the promotion of that as a form of modernisation with the boosting of rural livelihoods and the boosting of poor in the context of rural development, broadly defined, rather than simply identifying and specifying family farmers per se as something outside of a more generalised development problematic. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, profesor Bush. Y disculpe por no comentar su intervención. Tampoco lo hizo con la intervención de Sergio Schneider, pero eso era solamente para ahorrar tiempo y dejar más tiempo para los demás panelistas y el debate. Bueno, ahora le paso la palabra al profesor Samoyo Zimbabwe, director ejecutivo del Instituto Agrario Africano de Estudios Agrarios. Será la palabra, señor Moyo.
Okay, thank you very much. How to compress the paper into 5 minutes. Fortunately, much of the conceptual, the framing of the concept of family farming by Sergio and Ray, I follow. Let me try and highlight some important issues regarding the debate itself and creating an enabling environment in sub-Saharan Africa. First of all, there is some increasing recognition of the importance of family farming and trying to create policies to enable it. But there's a huge ambivalence, I would say, in the African continent amongst policymakers, amongst big development agencies and donors about their role. In fact, I don't believe that the diagnosis that we have up to now is adequate. It is still inadequate. And for that reason, there's also quite a lot of disagreement as to what the measures to address the key problems, which problems in any case are we supposed to address first? In other words, we do hear that, yes, important, the contribution of family farms in sub-Saharan Africa to food, to livelihoods, the bulk of the population, over 95% of the farming unit structures are family farms. But very much pervasive in the writings, in the policies, is the idea that family farms cannot do it on their own, that in fact we have to, not just on their own, but in fact that we need to develop alternate corporate systems of farming. And this is a huge development in the last 10, 15 years on the continent that is undermining any coherent framework, policy framework. So this would be my first pitch on at the broad level. The second point that I would like to highlight is the character of family farms, of course, diversity. There are many lines around which we could see the diversity of family farming. For instance, the focus from agropastoralism, pastoralism, mixed farming, mixed farm cropping, and different types of specialization of cropping. There's a huge range of diversities, criteria around which we can find diversity. There's also a more generic differentiation of family farms across in terms of inequitable access to land, capability to mobilize sufficient labor and financial inputs to procure financial resources to procure inputs and so forth. These are enduring points around which there's differentiation. Now, what is interesting, and the reason why I want to highlight it for this debate, is that we have an understanding that differentiation means, or some proposals, that differentiation means that we should have different strategies. And one of the most misinformed, I would say, strategy is to say that we must promote the exit of the least capable from the family farming system, partly because they do not have enough land, or they do not have certain kind of resources. But the reasons for those constraints are not properly analyzed, and I want to come back to that. Second point I want to make here is that family farms are located, we say 95% in sub-Saharan Africa. If we took out South Africa and maybe Namibia and, Zimbabwe, what used to be, probably family farms are about 98% of sub-Saharan in terms of their contribution to foods in the markets, to and so forth, right? Now, the problem is that throughout the continent, we have over a second or third wave of land alienation that is taking place to create large-scale estates, large-scale commercial farms, and large-scale plantations, agro-industrial estates. About 20 countries on the continent are moving in the direction of establishing huge farms. Now, this is a continent where that if we look at the per capita decline in available arable land, is very sharp in the last 15, 20 years. The per capita decline in the cropped area, mainly by family farms, is also sharply declining. And so we put this across the creation, the ascendance of large-scale estates, mostly in prime areas, arable areas, and in areas which have the most lucrative water resources. Then we have greater inequality in land, greater marginalization in land. And so access to land is the sine qua non of family farming. And so the current trend is not one which takes us to a future sustainable family farming. A third aspect about the character of family farming is that the cultural values and so forth, very important in terms of social protection, diverse forms of creating social protection, but there are certain retrogressive elements of the labor system because capital, labor resources within family farms are not equally distributed or controlled, so that you have gender inequalities and generational inequalities in the deployment of use, the division of labor and so forth. So this is a constraint to the increase in productivity in its own right. Okay. And the absence of state systems, that social protection systems that support the social reproductive labor. Okay. So these kind of constraints, I think, are important to highlight in the debate. Now, looking at the challenges more broadly, the general idea in the literature is that productivity is very low in general in sub-Saharan Africa, especially among family farms, compared at least one quarter or third of the other developing regions, correct, factually speaking. Food imports have been rising and very costly, especially since the last spike. These are correct. But why? Why is it that the continent over the last 30 years has, in fact, not continued to grow in terms of these characteristics as others? Why is it that the continent has less irrigation resources, is still below 3% compared to 15-plus in other parts of the world? Well, the key to this is the adoption of unfriendly policies for family farmers since the 1980s. Because if you look at the data, the trends up to late 1970s, the trajectory of any of these characteristics, productivity and so forth, was going upwards. Since then, the major problems with the policies, and which I think is the problem, the retreat from public support for productivity-enhancing technologies, the retreat from of public protection of certain food markets vis-à-vis external subsidies and so forth. And, in fact, the decline in infrastructural investment, public infrastructural investment. So the policy environment has made the returns to investment in productivity enhancing elements unviable. Okay, so I have one more minute. Now, so in conclusion, the way forward then. I say I agree with the broad conclusion that we're looking for a way to have a sustainable land use intensification in general, and we have to look at this in terms of a greater role of public support and intervention in a broader rural development framework, which includes social protection as well as the investment in productive inputs. Yeah. Most important is this also is to limit the continued alienation of land, marginalizing access, increasing the inequalities to land. And finally, probably the most critical gap is the capacity of organizations that represent family farmers and those that support those organizations to have a capacity to advocate and pressure the government's international agencies for better policies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Samoyo. Without further delay, I will pass the floor to Professor Sergio Schneider for his focus on Latin America and the Caribbean. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Francesco. In Latin America and the Caribbean region, family farming comprises amount near 17 million units, comprising a population of about 60 million people in the whole continent. Estimations point that 57% of these units are located in South America, especially Brazil and Argentina. And 75% of the whole production of the units is in almost all American countries is, in many of these, exceed 90%. There are at least two countries that family farming contributes with more than 90% of the total production of the agriculture. So there are countries that are countries of family farms. There is a huge inequality in terms of number of agriculture units and how the land is distributed in Latin America. Latin Americans, we every time talk about this inequality agrarian structure. In the Caribbean region, there are more or less the average of land per unit is 2.59, and in family farms is even lower, 1.3 hectares per average family farms. But then, if we go to the southern cone, southern American, we have an average of establishments area land area 195 hectares, and family farms in average have 47 hectares. So it's in Latin America, family farming it's very diversified and very unequal, as I said before, in terms of land distribution, in terms of historical roots. What are the main features in Latin America of family farms? So diversity is the main feature. Diversity in terms of historical backgrounds, historical in terms of the pre-Columbian origins, before people from indigenous people movement, they just highlight this point, and this is definitely true that family farms, especially in the Andean region, comes from a background of this historical ethnic groups. But then we have also the groups that comes in from the migration from Europe, and this is part of our diversity of the family farm. So this structural evolution of family farming in Latin America is our main feature, and we have to deal with this. And this is our main wealth as well. We don't have to think to reduce this diversity. We have to foster, we have to enable, we have to stimulate, support this diversity, and family farming can reach a more important environment for that. So what are the main challenges for family farming in Latin America and the Caribbean? The regional dialogue of FAO indicate at least seven main points, and they are really good diagnoses. The improvement of knowledge, broadening scope of action of public policy, encourage of participation of the farmers' movement, increasing access to land, and expand financing programs, and support initiatives for young and gender people, and also develop policies for women's autonomy. This regional dialogue can be we can add to this features that the main challenges for family farming in Latin America and the Caribbean is the strong pressure of the agribusiness corporate sector interested in more land acquisition and also mining reserves in the whole region. So we are facing a lot of problems with this new process of land and mine business in the country, and this affects family farmers and also about markets. Latin Americans become one of the big regions to export food for the world, and some of these cash crops are making pressure on family farms and exclude family farming from the access to markets, as well as global warming is also a main challenge for family farming in Latin America and the Caribbean, especially because it's a region where the biodiversity is in different countries is very important, and family farmers have no support to deal with these features. And finally, another challenge that faces family farming in Latin America are related to demographic issues, both by the migration from people from Latin America and special Central America to other countries, North America especially, and also to Europe, and also internal demographic changes related to more to that people get more older and young people go out from the rural area. Latin America has become in the last 20, 30 decades a very urbanizing region, so the policies have to look at how to support the rural as a whole, and especially the young and the women at the rural. So finally, about the policy enabling environmental, what can we say about that? First, we need in Latin America more institutionalizing family farms. There is a difference. There are some countries that are in the forefront from this discussion. Family farming is well recognized, but in the other countries is still weak. We have to strengthen this recognition. And in the countries where family farming is on the forefront, there is a point about the sectoriality of the policies. As I said before, family farm need a special environment in order that can be developed, and in some cases family farm is still too more focused on credit, and also it's very important and is increasing the social organization on family farmers in Latin America. There are lots of social organizations that are very important even for to help to develop the state policies. Finally, final comment on policies that should be improved, should be support for family farms. Policies for family farming in Latin America have to take in account this diversity. There is no one received and we cannot prepare just one recommendation. But for sure, policies that support assets like land, infrastructure, and also access to seeds is very important. Third, the reduction of the external dependency, especially dependency on inputs like seeds and fertilizers, is very important for family farms, as well as machinery. Adapt machinery for family farms is a very important issue in order that they can produce more with less. The relative success of family farming policies in Latin America, we can say that combine three main areas: production, food security, and social policies. There is a big challenge to how to follow up, how to deeper these policies to credit, to fight against poverty, and to support policies like cash transfer from the example of Brazilian family scholarship and the Mexico program of support poor people in rural areas. Fifth, the power of the state is still very important for family farms in Latin America, especially using policies, using devices like food procurement policies, for example, to buy food from the family farms for the school meals has become a very important policy. And also policies that can buy food from family farms to distribute for social policies. In Latin America, there are different countries that are making very interesting initiatives about that. And sixth, innovation and technological assistance. In Latin America, there is still a key point about the role of rural extension. Rural extension have to be reinforced in Latin America in different countries. The neoliberalism in some countries simply privatize the rural extension service, and the policies have to retake these initiatives. And seven, and finally, support the families, especially by policies to young people and gender, especially to women. And finally, last but not least, we have to improve our statistics. Statistics are very weak, and statistics make they still are using definitions that are not taking in account the diversity. We have to give a step forward in terms to know better about this diversity of family farm in Latin America. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Gracias, profesor Sergio Schneider. Bueno, ahora tenemos una batería de comentaristas de altísimo nivel y tenemos acá tres embajadores especiales del año y dos ministros. Aquí la FAO agradece muchísimo por su presencia más una vez. Y la idea es que nosotros utilicemos los 20 minutos que tenemos ahora para que los comentaristas puedan reagir a las ponencias de los autores de los papers y darle la palabra otra vez a los autores y ver si tenemos tiempo para que salgan preguntas del público. Embajadora Mina Cunningham, usted está con la palabra. Gracias.
Muchas gracias, señor moderador. Distinguidos señores y señoras, quiero en primer lugar saludarlos en nombre de mi comunidad indígena, el pueblo indígena Miskito de Nicaragua, que está precisamente en estos momentos celebrando nuestro 29 aniversario de autonomía, que es una apuesta a una transformación estructural del Estado para responder a la multietnicidad y a los derechos de pueblos indígenas y afrodescendientes. Yo celebro que en este año, en América Latina, se haya podido visibilizar el acumulado de experiencia en algunos países para abordar el tema de la agricultura familiar. Ha servido en otros para sensibilizar, para posicionar la agenda de la agricultura familiar y ha podido demostrarse que cuando hay políticas, programas, protección social y recursos para los pequeños agricultores, se reduce la pobreza y se reduce el hambre, especialmente en el campo. Quiero, sin embargo, destacar en mis comentarios cuatro aspectos. En primer lugar, algo que se ha mencionado mucho, que es el de la diversidad. Y quiero abordar el tema de la diversidad cultural de las y los agricultores familiares. Y en este contexto de la agricultura familiar, quiero recordar que en América Latina vivimos 800 pueblos indígenas, más de 40 millones de personas indígenas. Entonces, cuando se habla que hay 60 millones de agricultores familiares, más de la mitad de esos agricultores familiares pertenecemos a pueblos indígenas. En ese contexto, el concepto y la definición de agricultura familiar tiene que continuar profundizándose y ampliándose. Porque para nosotros agricultura familiar significa todo lo que se ha mencionado aquí, pero también significa lo que nuestros pueblos llaman cosechar lo que el Ser Supremo nos ha dado por generaciones y nosotros hemos podido conservar y cuidar. Entonces, la articulación entre agricultura, forestería, pesca es fundamental. En ese aspecto, también quisiera señalar que el tema de derecho y tenencia de territorial, de derechos territoriales, es fundamental. Porque para nosotros, los pueblos indígenas, el tema del territorio y el control sobre los recursos naturales tiene múltiples dimensiones. No solo lo vemos como el área de siembra y cosecha, sino también el área de espiritualidad, el área de reproducción cultural y, por lo tanto, el trabajo familiar y comunitario está íntimamente vinculado. No es por nada que Vía Campesina, por ejemplo, utiliza el término agricultura familiar, comunitaria, indígena e intercultural. O sea, nosotros en América Latina no solo vemos a la unidad familiar, sino la articulación entre esa unidad familiar y la comunitaria. El cuarto aspecto sobre el que quiero recalcar tiene que ver precisamente con los factores que contribuyen a la resiliencia de la agricultura familiar. Y se han mencionado los conocimientos tradicionales, el idioma, la diversificación productiva, pero no ver la diversificación productiva desvinculado de los aspectos económicos. La diversificación productiva nos permite a nosotros estar preparados para el riesgo ambiental, pero también nos permite reducir los costos económicos en la producción. Y vinculado a este aspecto de la diversificación productiva está lo que nosotros llamamos el papel que deben de jugar las instituciones económicas ancestrales, el Inti Raymi, el Pana Pana, la festividad comunitaria. Aquí nosotros dentro de la, en eso nos diferenciamos del campesino. Nosotros tenemos la agricultura familiar basada en las relaciones familia-comunidad y el papel que juegan estas instituciones económicas basadas en la reciprocidad, la solidaridad, la ayuda mutua. Distinguidos señores y señoras, yo quisiera concluir haciendo algunas recomendaciones. En primer lugar, necesitamos coherencia en las políticas sobre uso y tenencia de la tierra. Estamos perdiendo áreas de agricultura familiar porque se están entregando a concesiones mineras, concesiones de hidrocarburos, concesiones forestales, el monocultivo. Realmente en América Latina tenemos que lograr que nuestros estados definan cuál es su posición en cuanto al uso de la tierra, porque esa competencia realmente nos está expulsando a los pueblos indígenas de nuestros territorios y de las posibilidades de sembrar. En segundo lugar, necesitamos mantener un balance entre la producción para el mercado internacional y la producción para la seguridad alimentaria. La quinoa es el mejor ejemplo. Las comunidades productoras de quinoa ya no pueden comer quinoa porque se está comiendo en Europa a mejores precios. ¿Cómo mantenemos ese balance del mercado con la seguridad alimentaria? Necesitamos políticas muy claras en ese sentido. Y esto tiene que ver con ese millar de productos alimenticios que aún son desconocidos y nosotros utilizamos en nuestros pueblos. Y que una vez que se vuelven conocidos, perdemos nosotros la propiedad intelectual sobre ellos. Ese es otro aspecto. La capacitación y acompañamiento a los productores indígenas, comunitarios y familiares es importante, pero utilizando metodologías que respeten el diálogo de saberes, metodologías en donde lo que ustedes saben es correcto, pero lo que nosotros hemos practicado de forma ancestral también es correcto y necesitan contar con espacios para diálogo. Tenemos que superar la limitada información que aún existe sobre el aporte de las mujeres, el aporte de los pueblos indígenas con estadística, con desagregación étnica e indicadores relevantes. Tenemos oportunidades, aprovechemos el mercado justo. Aprovechemos que hemos logrado a nivel global como pueblos indígenas posicionarnos como titulares de derecho. Nosotros, pueblos indígenas, podemos aportar para reducir el hambre, pero lo queremos hacer con dignidad. Y para hacerlo con dignidad necesitamos que nuestros derechos básicos sean reconocidos y sean incorporados en las distintas políticas. En ese sentido, América Latina puede contribuir más al debate de agricultura familiar y a la reducción del hambre, pero respetando realmente la diversidad. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias, embajadora Cunningham. Yo voy a quebrar un poco la rutina y voy a pasar la palabra al ministro de Agricultura, Ganadería y Pesca de la República de Argentina, así que consolidemos antes un bloque latinoamericano y después empezamos con nuestros otros operes. Gracias. Se da la palabra, señor ministro.
Muchas gracias. Muy buenos días. Quiero comenzar unos pequeños comentarios rescatando las ideas centrales y conceptuales que acaba de decir la embajadora Cunningham, porque a veces es difícil transmitir en 5 minutos un continente tan diverso como América Latina, pero de todas maneras cuestiones conceptuales como las que ha descrito la embajadora son centrales para analizar diagnósticamente y el futuro de América Latina en este sentido. Yo de todas maneras quería hacer algunos comentarios vinculados a 2 o 3 temas que hoy se trataron y que inclusive fueron mencionados por la representante de Vía Campesina. Y están referidos a las visiones políticas, estructuralmente políticas, de cómo se diseñan las políticas públicas para el andar de la agricultura familiar. Y en la década de los 90, el diseño de las políticas públicas estaba tendiendo claramente a anular el rol del Estado, a transformar el Estado en un Estado no presente, en un Estado ausente, en un Estado que miraba para otro lado y que de ninguna manera estaba asumiendo la responsabilidad de analizar y hacerse cargo de la problemática de la pequeña agricultura en nuestros países. Y esto ocurrió prácticamente como una estrategia claramente diseñada porque todo el continente se subsumió en ese tipo de diseño de políticas públicas en donde claramente se diseñaba la ausencia del Estado. Y una de las cuestiones que se diferencian claramente en el andar y en el progreso y en el futuro de la agricultura familiar es el rol del Estado. El Estado es prácticamente el único capaz de garantizar la inclusión, de garantizar la equidad, de garantizar la igualdad de oportunidades, de garantizar finalmente un equilibrio de las sociedades, sobre todo cuando hay no solo diferencias sociales, culturales, sino básicamente intereses económicos claramente diferenciados en nuestros países. De tal forma que lo que uno puede revisar es que las dificultades y el fracaso de estas políticas se han transformado hoy en una mirada totalmente diferente y todos los gobiernos, o casi todos los gobiernos, al menos de América del Sur, están revitalizando la mirada sobre la agricultura familiar, haciendo una cuestión, la primera más elemental, que es visibilizar a la agricultura familiar, admitir la existencia de la agricultura familiar. Pensar en los millones de habitantes de nuestro continente y de nuestros países que claramente están vinculados con la producción de la agricultura familiar, con la producción finalmente de alimentos para su propia subsistencia, para sus propias comunidades y para los mercados. Y hablando del tema de mercados, y yo descarto ya conceptualmente la mirada nuestra sobre los pequeños agricultores desde el punto de vista de una economía comercial que incluye los campesinos y que incluye los pueblos originarios. Nuestra gestión en el Ministerio de Agricultura de Argentina acaba de crear hace 2 meses, después de mucho trabajo, la Dirección de Pueblos Originarios dentro de la Secretaría de Agricultura Familiar que nuestro país tiene, con lo cual es un hecho para nosotros trascendente y ha generado un punto de partida político totalmente diferente a como veníamos describiendo la historia pasada. Y uno de los temas que se ha hablado mucho en los diferentes posturas o paneles ha sido esto de la institucionalización. Y ahí estamos absolutamente comprometidos con generar un diseño organizacional del Estado y de los productores para que claramente la articulación público-privada genere una mirada común y un camino común hacia adelante. Y en esto quiero hacer un comentario específico. En nuestras políticas estamos absolutamente decididos a poner la misma cantidad de recursos en diseños políticos, en ejecución de políticas, en recursos económicos y en recursos humanos para los emprendimientos productivos que mejoren la capacidad de producir de la agricultura familiar, exactamente la misma cantidad en modelos de organización que la gente se dé para tener una mayor solidez para poder enfrentar ese camino creciente hacia adelante, entre ellos la vinculación con el mercado. Y desde el punto de vista de nuestras políticas hay 2 elementos que son claves. En la mirada, digamos, de una cadena de valor, para nosotros los 2 extremos son la clave política de nuestro gobierno. El primero es tener mucho cuidado qué es lo que pasa con los productores, qué es lo que pasa con la remuneración y la ganancia de sus esfuerzos familiares, de su capital y de su trabajo. Y en el otro extremo, qué es lo que está pasando con los consumidores, que claramente deben tener la posibilidad cierta y clara de llegar a productos en cantidad, en calidad, en inocuidad y en precios razonables. En el medio, hoy se hablaba también de las cadenas intermediarias que claramente ocupan un espacio cada vez más preponderante y que se quedan con una parte de la renta, sin duda, incorporada en sus propias economías de servicio. Un comentario que hizo el profesor Schneider, yo quiero también tomarlo y compartirlo con ustedes, y es que la incorporación de tecnología, pero fundamentalmente la incorporación de conocimientos que sepan ser compatibles con los saberes y los conocimientos culturalmente instalados, es una clave para seguir avanzando en el desarrollo de la agricultura familiar. No hay que trabajar sobre la agricultura familiar para mantener la pobreza en el campo, hay que trabajar claramente para transformar esa pobreza en elementos de riqueza y, como decían hoy, el mercado es capaz de hacerlo, pero no capaz de distribuirlo. Y ahí aparece nuevamente el rol de la política y el rol del Estado en este tipo de garantías. Un último comentario de mi parte, y perdón si me he extralimitado en el tiempo, y es, yo quisiera poner énfasis en seguir instalando en estos niveles de debate, y de debate abierto y de diálogo mundial, el tema del fortalecimiento de la cooperación sur-sur. Los países han recuperado capacidades, han recuperado habilidades, han recuperado experiencias, y existe un enorme potencial de intercambio de programas de cooperación que generen un diálogo mucho más fluido y la mirada más rápida sobre experiencias que puedan ser compatibles y utilizables por cada uno de nuestros países. Como decía hoy el amigo de España, no hay recetas únicas, pero sí hay cuestiones para ver, porque algunas cuestiones de esas se pueden trasladar, se pueden adaptar y sirven para modificar la realidad de cada uno de nuestros países. Muchas gracias.
Muchísimas gracias, señor ministro, y también para estar acá con nosotros, acá en Roma, en este diálogo global. Ahora le paso la palabra a Mr. Ibrahim Koulibaly, IYFF Special Ambassador for Africa. Please, Mr. Koulibaly, you have the floor.
Merci, merci beaucoup, monsieur le modérateur. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. C'est avec un grand intérêt que j'ai suivi le document qui a été présenté par les éminents chercheurs sur ce que l'agriculture familiale représente aujourd'hui. C'est un vrai plaisir de voir que la recherche de plus en plus s'intéresse à l'agriculture familiale et cette année a joué un grand rôle dans ce virage. On commence à chiffrer la contribution de l'agriculture familiale dans la sécurité alimentaire, la création d'emplois, la lutte contre la pauvreté, la résilience au changement climatique, la contribution au développement local. Je pense que ces recherches sont d'une importance capitale pour le travail de plaidoyer et de lobbying des mouvements sociaux qui se battent pour la promotion de l'agriculture familiale. Cependant, force est de reconnaître que ces aspects qui sont étudiés ne répondent pas à tous les aspects et à toute la complexité des problèmes auxquels l'agriculture familiale fait face. Ces résultats de recherche, notamment, ne nous disent pas pourquoi en Afrique, on n'avance pas. Pourquoi le nombre de personnes qui ont faim augmente? Pourquoi le nombre d'exclus augmente? Pourquoi le nombre de personnes qui vont dans les villes augmente? Quand on parle des pauvres, des paysans en Afrique, du non-accès à l'alimentation, que ce soit au niveau gouvernemental ou bien au niveau des institutions de financement international qui interviennent en Afrique, la question est tout de suite, il n'y a pas assez de ressources. Et pourtant, face au refus d'investir dans l'agriculture familiale, on voit qu'il y a beaucoup de ressources qui sont mobilisées à travers des projets qui sont élaborés justement au nom des personnes les plus vulnérables, mais que personne ne contrôle, en dehors de quelques décideurs politiques. Je pense qu'il est temps aussi, il est temps maintenant, que la recherche se penche sur ces aspects souvent occultes, qui sont pourtant le nœud de la problématique de la vulnérabilité des agricultures familiales. La recherche devrait nous dire aujourd'hui pourquoi il y a une défaillance généralisée des politiques publiques en Afrique qui rendent vulnérable l'agriculture familiale. Pourquoi l'Afrique est devenue un cimetière de politiques, de stratégies, de programmes de toutes sortes qui sont souvent pourtant très bons mais qui ne sont jamais mis en œuvre. Pourquoi, par exemple, le programme détaillé de développement de l'agriculture en Afrique, élaboré dans le cadre du NEPAD, il y a plus de 10 ans, n'a pas connu son premier acte de mise en œuvre. Pourquoi les chefs d'État de la CEDEAO, qui est la communauté économique des États d'Afrique de l'Ouest, vont signer un accord de libre-échange avec l'Union européenne, alors que leur politique agricole, élaborée par ces États mêmes, avec la contribution de l'ensemble de la société civile, des mouvements paysans, n'a pas connu son premier acte de mise en œuvre? Pourquoi la même CEDEAO peut trouver 12 millions de dollars par mois pour maintenir une mission militaire de stabilité en Guinée-Bissau et pas 20 millions de dollars pour la mise en place de la réserve régionale qui aurait été le premier acte de mise en œuvre de la politique agricole régionale? La recherche devrait nous dire pourquoi les jeunes issus de l'agriculture familiale, exclus de toute forme de scolarité et d'accès à un mieux-être, rejoignent en masse aujourd'hui les groupes armés en Afrique de l'Ouest. Pourtant, on sait ce qui marche, et d'autres l'ont fait. Je pense notamment au programme Fin Zéro du Brésil, qui aurait pu rester une stratégie morte s'il n'y avait pas eu la volonté politique d'investir dedans et de le porter. Je pense que l'Afrique... Les chercheurs en Afrique doivent se pencher prioritairement sur les questions des fonds qui plombent le développement tout court et surtout la promotion de l'agriculture familiale et l'accès à un mieux-être pour la majeure partie de la population. Il n'y a pas d'alternative à investir dans cette forme d'agriculture si nous voulons un continent sécurisé. Nous pensons qu'il est temps de répondre à ce genre de questions si nous voulons avancer. Je vous remercie beaucoup.
Muchas gracias, embajador Coulibaly. Yo quisiera hacer una propuesta para la asamblea toda. Estamos acá con un problema de traducción. Los intérpretes están trabajando muy duro, más tiempo de lo que contratamos. Y entonces la propuesta que hacemos, y aquí le damos ahora la palabra al ministro Diallo, y después le damos la palabra al embajador Ould Salek. En la próxima sesión, que también sobre perspectivas regionales, incluso podemos empezar la próxima sesión un cuarto de hora antes de lo que estaba previsto. O sea, no a las 2 de la tarde, pero sí a 15 para las 2. Si están de acuerdo, me parece la manera mejor de superar ese problema que tenemos con la traducción. Sin demora, entonces, le voy a dar la palabra al ministro Diallo, le agradezco más una vez, y después agradezco también al embajador Ould Salek para hablar después en la próxima sesión. Muchas gracias. Por favor, ministro, usted da la palabra.
Bien. Merci, monsieur Pierre. Je voudrais d'abord remercier la FAO pour avoir organisé cette session, mais aussi surtout toute la communauté internationale pour avoir fait de cette année l'année de l'agriculture familiale. En fait, l'intérêt porté aujourd'hui à l'agriculture familiale. Pour nous, en Afrique, porter un intérêt à l'agriculture familiale, c'est simplement, tout simplement, porter un intérêt à l'agriculture en Afrique, dans la mesure où, comme certains l'ont déjà dit, plus de 70% de notre agriculture est familiale. Mais je voudrais aussi attirer l'attention, être un peu, en fait, exprimer une inquiétude. Il ne faudrait pas que le fait de faire de l'année 2014, l'année internationale de l'agriculture familiale, soit une manière d'évacuer la question et qu'après cette année, qu'on n'en parle plus. Il faudrait que ça soit une opportunité de porter la question sur l'agenda international et de maintenir la question au niveau de l'agenda international. Ceci dit, je vais axer mes commentaires sur quatre points. D'abord, sur les aspects stratégiques. Ensuite, sur l'agriculture familiale et la nutrition. L'agriculture familiale, les changements climatiques et les perspectives. Mais avant cela, je vais dire à mon voisin de droite qu'il faut éviter de peindre la situation africaine en noir. Il y a quand même des avancées. Il y a des gens qui se battent tous les jours, il y a des changements qui se font. Il faut éviter de montrer l'Afrique toujours dans une situation de misère, de catastrophe. On ne peut pas avancer tant qu'on ne reconnaît pas les aspects positifs qui se font sur notre continent. Et je pense que notre continent est en train de se transformer. Il faut qu'on le reconnaisse. Et justement sur le plan stratégique, au niveau du Niger, nous mettons en œuvre depuis 3 ans l'initiative 3N. Qui est justement essentiellement basé sur l'agriculture familiale. Et je peux dire, je vais faire le lien, il s'agit pour nous de permettre les 7 A, permettre l'accès aux aspects suivants, accès à la terre, accès à l'eau, accès aux intrants, accès au crédit, accès à l'information, accès à la formation et accès au marché pour les petits agriculteurs. Et bien, je dois avouer que nous mettons particulièrement l'accent sur l'accès à l'eau. Pourquoi l'accès à l'eau? Parce que nous sommes dans un pays du Sahel. Notre première contrainte de production est l'accès à l'eau. Donc nous faisons l'effort pour que chaque petit exploitant agricole puisse accéder à l'eau d'abord. Et le second aspect sur lequel nous mettons l'accent, c'est l'accès au marché. Et en particulier le développement du marché local. Tout à l'heure, on avait évoqué dans le cas du Brésil des achats locaux. Nous essayons, à la mesure de nos moyens, de faire la promotion des achats locaux. Et nous demandons à nos partenaires d'appuyer. Par exemple, aujourd'hui, nous demandons aux PAM, particulièrement dans ces achats, d'abord d'acheter local pour permettre aux petits producteurs de pouvoir bénéficier du fruit de leur production. Donc, À notre échelle, il y a des efforts qui se font et je pense que c'est comme ça qu'on peut amener la transformation. Maintenant, mon second point de commentaire, c'est l'agriculture familiale et la nutrition. Comme vous le savez, je pense que la base de l'alimentation de nos populations en Afrique, en tout cas, c'est l'agriculture familiale, parce que c'est elle qui permet d'abord de nourrir le ménage, et c'est à ce niveau aussi qu'on peut faire la diversification agricole. Mais il faut dire aujourd'hui que c'est une forme d'agriculture qui est menacée avec l'homogénéisation de l'alimentation en général. Aujourd'hui, en Afrique, en particulier en Afrique de l'Ouest aujourd'hui, nous avons de plus en plus des repas riz, sauce, tomate, matin et soir, pauvres, et qui naturellement participent à la malnutrition. Nous avons le développement des fast-food. Tout ceci, c'est des aspects qui vont à l'encontre de l'agriculture familiale et qui vont à l'encontre de l'alimentation. Donc, pour moi, il est important que dans le cadre des actions, de pouvoir soutenir la diversification des productions, de soutenir la transformation locale. Pour aller vite, le second aspect, c'est l'agriculture familiale et le changement climatique. À ce niveau, comme vous le savez, en tout cas, nos systèmes de production familiaux étaient pour l'essentiel des systèmes de production intégrés. Notamment, en tout cas dans le cas du Sahel en particulier, il y a une forte intégration entre l'agriculture et l'élevage. Mais aujourd'hui, nous sommes en train de constater une désarticulation de ces systèmes, justement due à une forte pression des capitaux internationaux qui désarticulent l'introduction du marché, qui font que actuellement ce sont des aspects qui sont de moins en moins, les équilibres là sont de plus en plus rompus. Donc il y a un travail aussi à pousser vers la promotion des bonnes pratiques qui préservent l'environnement, par exemple le zéro labour et la promotion des systèmes peu consommatrices d'énergie, etc. Et pour aller toujours vite, parce que je constate que je n'ai pas beaucoup de temps, je vais pour l'avenir. À mon sens, et c'est important, on ne peut pas aujourd'hui parler de l'agriculture familiale sans parler du développement, comme l'ont dit certains avant moi, du développement rural en général et de la création d'emplois. Quand je prends le cas du Niger, aujourd'hui, notre problème, la pression sur la terre, n'est pas due à l'accaparement des terres, comme on le dit, par l'extérieur, mais c'est dû à la pression démographique. Nous avons un taux de croissance de près de 3,9%. Tous les 25 ans, notre population double. Eh bien, sur les mêmes portions de terre, avec une famille de 7, 8, 10 personnes, il est clair que ce n'est pas là qu'on va pouvoir développer l'agriculture. L'agriculture ne peut pas se développer dans ces conditions. Il faut que les conditions soient créées pour permettre à la grande majorité, en fait, une bonne partie de la famille, d'aller vers d'autres activités extra-agricoles et permettre ainsi à ceux qui restent de pouvoir moderniser et transformer l'agriculture familiale pour qu'elle soit durable. Ça, c'est un aspect essentiel de mon point de vue si on veut que l'agriculture familiale soit durable et qu'elle se modernise. Voilà donc, Monsieur le Président, les commentaires que je voulais faire. Merci.
Muchísimas gracias, señor ministro. Please, Mr. Woodslack, you have the floor.
Merci. Je suis l'ambassadeur, s'il vous plaît, pour le nord de l'Afrique et le Moyen-Orient. Je suis spécialiste dans la pêche artisanale. Je présente 35 000 familles pêcheurs. Et aujourd'hui, je vais seulement insérer quelques mots qui servent exactement. Ils font partie de l'agriculture familiale, qui est la pêche artisanale, parce que ça se fait au niveau de la famille, spécialement au niveau de la famille. L'agriculture familiale est transcendante et son entend point de vue la génération de l'alimentation à partir du moyen familial. Groupe spécial résident le vrai potentiel de ce concept. Dans notre monde actuel, environ 90% de la pêche mondiale provient de la pêche artisanale. Emploi approximatif concernant un nombre d'hommes et de femmes. Les femmes servent la transformation à terre, le séchage, le fumage et la distribution locale. L'agriculture internationale familiale de fenêtres donne aussi l'importance à port de pêche artisanale de petite échelle à l'amélioration du monde de vie. Pour résumer ce qui précède, il faut mentionner les bénéfices spécifiques que les activités des initiatives portent pour milliers durant l'année 30 avec les clairs exemples de celles-ci à l'adoption de récentes des directions internationales visant la durabilité de la pêche à petite échelle. De la part de 143 membres du comité de pêche de FAO, pour la pêche, cela représentait un passé précédent et il constitue le premier instrument international dans son genre, développement spécifique ayant pour l'objectif la pêche à petite échelle. Nos besoins en tant que pêcheurs et intéressent, c'est l'expliquer que ce pays initiative renonce à la protection de modes de vie authentiques accessibles s'il a engendré quotidien de modes de pêche uniquement et fit en tournable génération qui contribue au progrès humanitaire pour le, depuis plus de 10 milliards d'années. Toutefois, le travail n'est pas encore terminé, il importe de maintenir des conditions pour lesquelles on contient des racines même d'où provient notre héritage culturel. Souvenons-nous que la pêche artisanale contribue aux larges mesures à la sécurité alimentaire du pays, à la promotion d'une nourriture appropriée. Tout ce qui précède fait partie de l'ensemble des solutions stratégiques de contenu. Et à la même occasion, je demande au FAO de mettre en priorité, s'il vous plaît, les familles qui sont démunies par la sécheresse de la culture, d'envoyer les enfants dans la pêche. Cette année, la Mauritanie, avec l'aide de la Banque mondiale, nous les artisans, on a absorbé 1800 jeunes qui appartiennent à deux familles qui ont perdu leur agriculture, ont été insérés dans la famille de pêche. Je vous remercie. Je vous continue une bonne continuation, s'il vous plaît.
Como estaba previsto, entonces procuremos retomar la discusión a las 13:45, un poco antes. Yo quisiera, en nombre de FAO, realmente agradecer muchísimo el esfuerzo de los intérpretes que están trabajando muy profesionalmente para que este debate tenga suceso. También agradezco al embajador Ousalek para tomar la palabra en la próxima sesión. Quisiera avisar también que a las 18:30 la República Argentina va a tener un evento paralelo sobre la agricultura femenina argentina a las 18:30 en el Salón Sheikh. Muchas gracias.